Well, the gospel is from Matthew chapter 25, also the basis of our morning meditation today. The final judgment. When the Son of Man comes in his glory and all angels with him, then he will sit on his glorious throne. Before him will be gathered all the nations, and he will separate people one from another, as a shepherd separates the sheep from the goats. And he will place the sheep on his right, the goats on the left. Then the king will say to those on his right, "Come, you who are blessed by my Father, inherit the kingdom prepared for you from the foundation of the world. For I was hungry, and you gave me food. I was thirsty, you gave me drink. I was a stranger, and you welcomed me. I was naked, and you clothed me. I was sick, and you visited me. I was in prison, and you came to me." Then the righteous will answer him, saying, "Lord, when did we see you hungry and feed you, or thirsty and give you drink? And when did we see you a stranger and welcome you, or naked and do nothing? And when did we see you sick or in prison and visit you?" And the king will answer them, "Truly I say to you, as you did it to one of the least of these my brethren, you did it to me." Then he will say to those to his left, "Depart from me, you cursed, into the eternal punishment prepared for you and the angels. For I was hungry and you gave me no food. I was thirsty, you gave me no drink. I was a stranger, you did not welcome me. Naked, you did not clothe me, and in prison, you did not visit me." Then they also will answer, saying, "Lord, when did we see you hungry or thirsty or a stranger or naked or sick or in prison and did not minister to you?" Then he will answer them, saying, "Truly I say to you, as you did it not to one of these, the least of these, you did not do it to me." Thus is our gospel for the day. Have you seen Jesus lately? Have you seen him walking around? Got any idea what he looks like? What would you look for? You know, there's no real description, no picture. We don't have a picture of Jesus, not even an artist painting. So how would we know what he looks like? And yet, there is a description of Jesus in the Old Testament, Isaiah 53, a picture of the suffering servant. And the translator of the King James and other versions, too, has used the word comely, sort of plain, average. Nothing to distinguish him from others. He didn't look like a king or a prince. He just average, probably short, as many Jewish people are. And yet we do have a very clear picture of what he looks like in the gospel just read. What are we looking for? Jesus said, "I walked among you. I was thirsty, you gave me a drink. I was hungry, you gave me some food. I was naked, you gave me clothes." Those are some real, real aspects. Some of these pictures will be flashing on the screen. I don't refer to them. Just get some pictures of what Jesus looks like. It's an amazing thing to understand that he walks among us all the time. But we don't see him. We don't see him because we don't want to see him. Jesus, on that last judgment scene, says, "I was around you all the time. You didn't see me." It's an amazing thing when we think about the ministry of our Lord Jesus Christ. He's come into this world with whom he has identified so carefully. One thing that's very important to understand, Jesus came for you. He came for me as individuals. Sometimes we in America particularly equate a lot of things to structure, organization, which has to do with the government. You notice Jesus has almost nothing to say about the government of Israel. or the government of Rome. People try to catch him once in a while. Do you think we ought to pay taxes to Caesar? Give me a coin. Whose inscription you got? Caesar on one side. Render to God what is God's and what is to man to man. What Jesus' ministry is primarily about is dealing with individual people. One person, two people at a time. Sure, he did preach at one point to 5,000. More than that, because if you included the women and children. He did preach the Sermon on the Mount. But most of Jesus' ministry was dealing with a small group. Or one person, dealing with one person at a time. Like he's going to deal with you, one person at a time. Not the family, you. Come on, Zacchaeus, come down to that tree, little man. I want to talk to you. You're cheating the people. Mary, getting some water at the well. You want to talk? You know, Mary, you've been living with seven men already. None of them are your husband. I know that. The man you're living with now is not your husband either. It's contrary to the Mosaic law, you know. Who are you? How do you know those things? I know you. But then that same person, the people were ready to stone her. They had bricks, they had stones, ready to kill her. Didn't it happen so often? Those who are the most guilty are the most judgmental on those who do the same thing. Oh, you've committed adultery. Yeah, well, you've had seven wives yourself. So what makes you the judge? What does Jesus say to that woman? He says something profound. He says, I haven't condemned you. I haven't condemned you. I don't have any stones to kill you. But then he said, go and sin no more. Turn your life around. Change your life. That's what he said the last words to the thief on the cross. Today you will be with me. I'm not condemning you. I'm not endorsing either. I'm just saying to your soul, your conscience, you know what I'm saying. Go sin no more. I accept you. That's what forgiveness is. That's what mercy is. That's what grace is. It's not the judgment. It's the forgiveness. And that's what Food to the Poor is all about. As we go on and meet with the poor, the naked. These are not symbols. These are real. First time I went to Haiti, I watched a group of kids playing soccer out in the streets. Dirt streets, no pavement. They didn't have a soccer ball. They had an old beat-up teddy bear with no arms or legs and just kicking anything around they could. What caught my attention was the number of kids. These were basically preteen kids, 10, 11, 12 years old, kicking around that old stuffed bear. What caught my attention is so many of the people had no clothes on, boys and girls. What do you think about it? You got a grandchild, you got a child, 12-year-old girl playing boys with boys, totally naked. I'd seen a lot of stuff in my life. Never saw that. I said, I can't believe it. So why don't they have clothes on? They have no way to get them. They have no money. They may or may not know their parents. They're just people existing. What we just read from Matthew, blessed are those who have provided clothes. Blessed are those who are naked and yet were given clothes. Blessed are those who are thirsty, given a drink. Sometimes we miss what I just read, so often just goes right over our head. We miss it entirely. We read the Bible, but we didn't comprehend it. You see, if I'm walking in a country of third world, could be Haiti, could be Honduras, could be Nicaragua, little boy comes up and says, Mister, you got any water in that jug you're carrying on your belt? I haven't had a drink all day, and I'm thirsty. I said, sure. Here's my jug. You drink the whole thing, I'll get more for you. What have I just done? I gave a little thirsty boy a drink, right? No. I just gave Jesus a drink. That's what the gospel says. I was thirsty. You want to see Jesus? You see him in your neighbor. You see him among those who don't have a life. They have an existence. Jesus is all around us. And he looks to us for consolation. Blessed are those who mourn, for they shall be comforted. One of the things that is so apparent from the Gospels is that special love Jesus shows, not only for the poor, but for the children. Let the children have a chance. Let the children have a chance. As little children. And we try to reach out to the children as soon as we can, when they're 2 and when they're 3. Not when they're 10 and 12. They're pretty well formed by that time. And that's why our biggest ministry financially is our school program, our teaching program. You see, we realize how important it is to have the opportunity to develop your skills. We are not a welfare organization. We don't give people much of anything. What we do is give them an opportunity to learn. And we start as long as we can. That's why the greatest fiscal expenditure we have is for our school program. But I'm not talking just about reading, writing, and arithmetic. We have that, very, very much so. But we also have a skills program, vocational training, teaching women how to cook again, how to use a stove or fires if they don't have electricity, which is often the case. How do you sew? How do you fix anything that we give you? We give you a house. You take care of it. How do you fix the roof? You see, every house that we built, and we have built over 120,000 houses, these little houses, they only cost $3,600. Many churches go together as an entire church to build a house. Sometimes a church might build a whole village, 35 to 50 houses. But every person that gets a house from us has to participate in that project. They have to help build the house. Get your kids. They can clear the land. Get grandma and grandpa to help. They can carry some shrubs too. But we want you to understand how to use a hammer, how to use a saw. And the rationale is that once you have built your house, you know how to fix it. If you got a leak developed in the roof, you know how to fix it. You don't have to wait for someone to come fix it. You help build it. Learning. Being self-reliant. How do you fish in deep water? That's where the big fish are. We built fishing village. We discovered. And I am a sailor at heart. I've done a lot of sailing. I worked at the Merchant Marine a lot. I worked on ships, and I've been in the Navy. But when I see those old rickety wooden boats that they're trying to put in order, I wouldn't sit in that boat on dry land for fear it's going to sink. They can't go in deep water with that. That's where the big fish are. So we built fishing villages. We started this about 10 years ago. And we get state-of-the-art boats, Grady Whites usually, from Rocky Mountain, North Carolina. We give one boat to 5 fishermen. And the fisherman that shows the greatest proficiency in handling a boat becomes the captain. 5 boats make a fishing village. That's 25 fishermen, including then their wives and children. And then we build 35 to 50 houses. And so they are self-contained. 25 fishermen and their families, and then we build a school in that community. We already have over 50 fishing villages that we have completed. Or teaching people how to grow fish. Tilapia. How many of you ever heard of tilapia fish 50 years ago or more? You haven't heard about it. It's an African fish. Now there's a new one that we're experimenting with. It's called Galagasi. It's also an African fish. Gets twice as big as a tilapia and takes about half of the food. In a fishing village, we have over tilapia ponds. We have built over 350 of them. And that gives employment to people. 35 to 50 people can work on a big fishing operation, a big place we grow tilapia ponds. It's an amazing thing how it changes a person's life, their self-esteem. They don't want welfare. I want the opportunity to raise money for my kids. I've had more people crying on my shoulders, men and women, but men saying, I'm so happy I can make my own money and send my children to school. It's another dynamic we don't really understand with much of the world. America is one of the few countries, I don't know, I haven't researched the whole thing. It may be the only country in the world where education is free for everybody. Sure, we pay taxes, obviously, but for the kids. In fact, we take it so seriously, theoretically, that we even insist that kids go to school. If not, you're a truant. And that's not the case in third world countries. If you want a child to be in school, you, the parent, have to provide uniforms. You have to provide all their books. You have to pay the teacher. It costs a lot of money to send a child to school. And that's why so many kids are not in school. They have no way of going to school unless somebody provides for them. And so that's one of our expenditures too, sending kids to school so they can learn. I told the Bible class, this little stole right here was made by a little girl who we found years ago on a garbage dump in Guatemala, in El Salvador, San Salvador. She was 12 years old with a little baby sister scavenging for food on a garbage dump in San Salvador. 12 years old, had never been to school. And we found out, put her to school. She was a bright little girl. And we paid her tuition all the way through college and all the way through med school. Dr. Louise Murray was her name, Louise Murray. About a year ago, I was reading the paper out in my patio, and I saw there was a NATO conference in Belgium. And the chief lecturer was a doctor from El Salvador by the name of Louise Marie. And I almost screamed to my wife. I said, I know this woman. I was in her kitchen when she made lunch, and I saw her laboratory. Her laboratory was the bottom third of her kitchen table. And she was experimenting a lot with soy products. And she got all the soys from farmers in southern Indiana. And she was some of our donors. And she was lecturing about the need for proper nutrition and diet for young babies and children. Is it worth what we do? That girl, when I was at her house, she was a young woman. She was finishing up her residency when I was in her home. And she gave me this stole. She said she made three of them when she was a young girl. And she wanted to give them to people who she thought would appreciate them. And she said, I think you'd appreciate this. And I do. In fact, my kids don't want me to take it on these trips because I have forgotten it a few places. But my kids don't know what I take, see? So I take it with me. And so people, what helping one little girl can do. We are not interested in the governments in a sense. Now, I usually don't talk about this, but in today's context, I have to. About all the immigrants coming from Latin America to this country and the immigration crisis and problem. We put that aside. We do not work with governments. We have nothing to do with foreign governments. We work only with people, one person at a time, like Louise Marie, like the little boy I give a drink to. And when you think about Scripture, Jesus did not come to this earth to reform Jerusalem and make a holy city in Israel. Jesus dealt with people, one person at a time. Forget what Herod. Herod wasn't a good leader. Herod had babies killed. We want nothing to do with the Herods of the world. We want nothing to do with the egos and the money. The same Jesus didn't come to clean up Rome. Who are the leaders of Rome? Nero, Caligula. Most of the leaders of world countries, even you read Scripture, and all the kings of Israel, there weren't many good ones in there. Even Solomon went bad as he got so wealthy. But we are dealing, by God's grace, with the people, and particularly among the poor. And so this has great meaning for me here, to find out what you can do by helping one person. Regardless of who you support, reach out and touch the face of Jesus, as Matthew tells us, in those who are destitute, those who are naked, those who are hungry, those who are thirsty. We come in to worship and worship a God of grace and love and mercy. One of the great problems we have this particular with Haiti, but we're getting some of that in South Florida too, and also in Texas, and also in California. But some of the Caribbean immigrants coming from Haiti, it's very difficult to try to help some people because they're under the spell of voodooism. Voodoo, false religions. And so many Americans worship false gods. In fact, the mindset of the growing lack of any religious conviction, much has to do with fear. The fear of a righteous God. And so I will define my God as being non-existent. And it reminds us very much of ancient times in the Tower of Babel, building the tower to God up to the heavens to show God that he doesn't exist, to show God that I am God. Ha-ha! We got all these gods. I am God. I'm the God of my own faith, the Tower of Babel. And that's the culture that we are developing in our own country. No longer do I need a God because we have money and we have education. We are so self-sufficient until the day comes when we're not self-sufficient. What do you do with a woman whose child suddenly becomes ill? And we know that a doctor can diagnose this illness and give you some medication. But because of this fear, so often, they will run off to the voodoo priest. And what is it about the voodoo priest? What is it about all false gods? The gods of culture, the gods of nature are symbols of anger, of conflict, and dislike for people. God is punishing me. God is angry, or the gods are angry. They're having war among themselves. And we buy into that. We even joke about it sometimes. Something happens, God's going to get you for that. God's not going to get you. He went to the cross to show you his love. But when that's so deeply ingrained, the voodoo priest will have some incantations. We say, what you need to go see a nurse who's going to give you an injection that we can ward off some of the illnesses. But rather than hearing that, the voice of love and grace and mercy, they run off and say, I'm being punished. I deserve to be punished because I'm evil, I'm bad. That's what I've learned all my life. I'm evil, I'm bad. And it's very difficult to communicate, even to young children, the God of grace and mercy. I love to talk to children. But you see, what I have learned over my years in life on this planet, I have a whole box full of, wall full of degrees and diplomas. They're all gathering dust out in my garage. I put them in some boxes when we retired. I haven't seen them, and I'll put them probably, tell my kids, take off the degrees, throw them away, and you got some free frames. I don't use theological words much anymore. I could talk about the teleological suspension of the infantry, teleological suspension of grace, or even the great dilemmas of whether it's objective or subjective justification. I'd rather talk to a little boy and a little girl about a friend. I asked them, do you have any friends? And many boys and girls don't really have many friends. So let me tell you about a friend. I have a good friend, and he wants to be your friend. You can talk to him. You can sing with him. You can walk with him and listen to the birds. And if you listen carefully, he'll talk to you. His name is Jesus. I want you to see Jesus. He loves you. He's going to take care of you. He wants you to talk to him. And then I'll tell him a parable. It might be a parable of the sheep and the lambs. It might be a parable of the Good Samaritan. And when I come to visit sometimes, and others of my community, we get off of our little buses, and the children come running as fast as they can. They know the bus. And I've got these little children around my ankles and little older children around my waist. And they have one thing in common. Missionary Volz, tell me a story about my friend. I want to know more about my friend. And they want to hear about Jesus. And I pray that you too want to hear about Jesus. Because at the center of our life, it's not our governments. It's not our strength. It's not our power. It's not our intellect. It's the love of a gracious, merciful, kind God. And that is our friend. And if you can support this ministry as you have done in the past, see, there's one of our fishing boats. It's a good 55-horse Merc engine on there. We get that almost at cost from the Ford Motor Company. You can watch many of these things. But you have been so gracious. Some of you in this parish have been very gracious in supporting Food for the Poor. Primary reason for me to be here is to say thank you and to continue what you can. You have this little brochure that I have in a bulletin this morning. Pretty much tells the story. I haven't talked too much about some of our ministries because you know about it from past experiences. But you can open this, and if you open this and you see a lot of our ministries there, But toward the right side, there are two pages. You rip it, and look at this. I've made a miracle. I made an envelope. Now, why do you think I have an envelope there? An envelope is a place you could put money. A little envelope here. Actually, if you fold a $100 bill and take about five of them out of your billfold, it'll fit. But an easy way, easier yet, is just take a check out of your wife's checkbook or wherever you can find the checks. Sign the bottom right-hand corner someplace. Just sign it. I'll fill in all the blanks. Don't worry about it. I'll fill out the check for you. A couple of houses here. That's all right. No. You know, I'm a little facetious when I talk about money because I have never liked to talk about money in a church. I always figure the people of God are going to respond according to the need as they perceive it. And I find that's pretty accurate. But we do have to talk about it, but we got to pay some bills once in a while. Even though, by God's grace, beginning in 1988, and I was 36 years old this year, 36 years, we started with one bag of rice donated by Publix grocery stores. One bag, 100-pound bag of rice. And in 36 years, last year we shipped out $1.3 billion worth of resources from the people of God. Our overhead is so low. Our operating expenses last year were 3.8%. 3.8% and over $1 billion. Nobody comes close to that because we're cheap. We're very frugal. We come to a place like this and we ask the members to provide lodging for us, provide transportation. If there are 95 of us staying in a hotel, think of the amount of money. We don't understand hotels. We rely on the people of God to provide for our needs. 3.8% on over $1 billion is quite amazing. Nobody gets big salaries. Certainly not those of us who are speakers. We're all retired clergy. And we serve with five different church bodies. All of us are historic and have a track record of fiscal accountability to a higher authority. You can use a credit card if you have that to use. Now, the nice thing about a credit card is you don't have to have one. Just borrow one from somebody. All I need is a couple of valid numbers, and they won't even know what the numbers are for. No. Again, that's part of being facetious. If you can provide a gift, at the end of the service, I'll stand back there, and you can give me an envelope, or you can give me cash, too. Now, $3,600 for a house, a couple hundred dollars for dwells. There's so many things we can do. But for $20, just now think about this for a minute, for only a $20 gift, we can feed 200 children. Because a bowl, a good bowl of rice or beans or combination costs us 8 cents. 8 cents for a bowl of nutritious rice or beans. And so for a $20 donation, you've just fed 200 kids lunch. Now for $20, sometimes you go out with the family, that's more than the tip is going to be more than that. If you provide $220, $40, we feed 400 kids. If you can provide $10, $10 will feed 100 kids. And so the American dollar has tremendous power in third world countries. That's really beyond understanding. P.T. Niles was a great missionary in India. At the first service, there was a couple of the members of this church from India. They know the area quite well. I have a sister-in-law who was born in that place where the people at were at church this morning come from that region. And her father was a missionary doctor, medical doctor. And he built a hospital and a chapel in memory of his grandfather. It's an amazing thing what a few people can do whose heart is so motivated. P.T. Niles was a missionary like that. And somebody asked him, Dr. Niles, what does it mean to be a child of God? What does it mean to be a disciple of Christ? He said, I'll tell you. To be a disciple of Christ is not hard. It's one poor beggar showing another poor beggar where to find a piece of bread. You see, you and I are all beggars before God. We are all beggars. And where's our bread? It's the bread of life. Jesus Christ. I like to think of worship like we're involved in now or in the morning of the Eucharist service, the Holy Communion. It's like going to the gas station. What do you do when you go to a gas station? You fill up the tank of your vehicle with gas, right? And then you sit there and listen to music. And you sit there and you smile. You're so happy. I'm at the gas station. I filled up my tank with gas. I think I'll just sit here and listen to some more music. No, that's not what you do. That's not the end goal. What you do is you put your vehicle in gear and you go out and go where you're going. The gas station is only to give you the energy, the fuel to go. And that's what it is going to church. Some people say, I went to church then. Oh, wonderful. So what does that mean? It means that that's the gas station. Now I go out into the world and I show what it's to be a Christian wherever. Where is the church on Thursday afternoon? It's wherever you are. Where is the church on Saturday evening? Wherever you are. You are the church. We are the church. We are the church together. And this is the gas station. This isn't the end result. It's to give us the power, to give us the energy, to give us the strength, to be the church where the Lord sends us. May God's grace keep all of us empowered by the good news of Jesus, our friend Jesus. At the end of the service, I'll stand by the door. I'd like to have you, don't put an offering, gift in the offering. I'd like to have you give it to me. But if you can't do that, you can give me one thing. You can tell me you're going to pray for us. That doesn't cost anything. It doesn't even cost much time. Because we live on prayer. We live on the people of God empowering us, giving us the energy to go and be the church of Jesus Christ in a land of darkness. God's peace, God's grace, God's love. Thank you.